hanging out with Legacy Gambit.
Next on Eternal Turtles.
He got it.
I was like, boom.
We'll try one more time so Sarah can join too.
Yeah.
Hanging out with Legacy Gambit.
Next on Eternal Turtles. This is impossible.
That's perfect. That was fine.
On your end, yes, but the thing is with the latency, it isn't perfect on my end, and you get thrown. Like,
he's fine.
We'll try it one more time.
Choose the loud one.
Okay, I'll do it. All right.
Hanging out with Legacy Gambit.
Next on Eternal Turtles.
Shout out to all of our Patreon supporters out there. Thank you to the Dirtle Maniacs. If you want to be a Dirtle Maniac, go to patreon.com/EternalDirtles and help support the channel. It keeps things going. It keeps things updated. Thanks so much for watching. On with the show.
Hello and welcome to Eternal Dirtles. I'm your host, Zach Clark. And Phil is out this week. He's out. He's actually getting a Brazilian butt lift surgery. So we will see how that works out for him when he comes back in a couple of weeks. Sarah of Legacy Gambit are here in his stead. How are you guys?
Hello, as a representative of the Brazilian butt lift community, I'm so glad for you to bring me on here in your co-host time of need.
Did you see what I said for the last episode? Did you guys get a chance? It was like the review I did for Joe Dyer's Legacy Roundtable. I was like, Phil's out this week. He is juror alternate number 6 on the Trump's fraud trial. Somebody reached out and was like, he's not really, is he? Like, you shouldn't tell people that. I was like,
no, he is. He's going to teach them the purpose of jury nullification.
Oh, God. Hey.
You're not supposed
to talk about jury nullification. There's a rule.
Oh my god, that was so funny.
It's very not okay to talk about jury.
Just like, small aside and then we get back to the thing. Have you seen the Northern Lion clip where he's talking about being a normal guy who drinks beer?
No.
Oh, there's just a bit where it's just like, yeah, I drink beer. I drink beer, I'm just a normal guy. I was at the January 6th uprising peacefully, I drink beer.
Oh, that's so funny.
I have one friend who I can confirm was there, but he was a photojournalist.
Oh, that's fine.
So he was there covering it. Like, he's actually won a couple awards since then because of where he was, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm still just imagining.
Curvy film amazing. Can't hurt.
Yeah.
It's such a good look.
Moving on from there, the vapors. It is actually hot in this room now. We were just talking about the weather. You guys have 71 where you're at. It's 56 where I'm at. That's insane. That's not even how weather's supposed to work between Philadelphia and both
in coastal towns. So it's humid as well, which is the thing they don't tell you. I'm dying.
What you want is a dry heat.
That's what they say in Arizona,
at least.
Yeah. Dry heat is literally the way. For London's not too bad, for sure. But yeah, I can imagine Liverpool getting a lot of just
we got the sea right there.
It's just bringing it here.
Just anywhere you go.
Whether you like it or not.
I mean, like, UK is like what, the size of New Jersey anyhow, right?
I mean, this is my. Every time I speak to Americans about the size of the UK, they're like, oh, yeah, we could drive across that in a day. And I was like, what?
But would you?
No, absolutely not.
So you're a whole order of magnitude off. I Googled this.
What's the order of magnitude for New Jersey?
The UK is 13 times bigger than New Jersey.
13. Times.
Yes. It's the size of Vermont, isn't it?
It's basically the size of Pennsylvania, then.
That's fine.
Let's find out together. I thought it was the size of Vermont. That's what someone keeps telling me.
No, Vermont's much smaller than New Jersey.
Well, Pennsylvania is 2.1 times smaller.
All right. Bigger than you guys.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so let's talk about Legacy.
Eternal Dirtles is sponsored by Tales of Adventure. You can go to toamagic.com, use the code DIRTLES
for 5% off your order, and you're going to get that whole order in one package. No more waiting for 5 or 6 or 12 packages to show up at your door so that you can finish your deck. TOAmagic.com, code DIRTLES for 5% off, and you'll be directly supporting the show.
Let's talk about Legacy and D.
So, yeah, I brought you guys on because, you know, I wanted a nice relaxing episode before Phil comes back, something that's a little lower lift for me, and I want to talk about what you guys are up to as far as Legacy content creation was concerned, and you know, where you're at in your ABCs as well.
Mm-hmm. We the last one we did was Lands, which we did with Albert Lindblom, also known as Ali or Mitgo on the social media, and that was a lot of fun. We're halfway through the alphabet. We're basically, you know, getting close to halfway through the alphabet, and we've definitely enjoyed doing the A to Z. But I feel also we've been doing it nearly a year, Sarah. That's terrifying. that's mildly terrifying that Sarah said yes and decided to jump on this escapade with me. But I feel like we've also kind of reached a stage where we want to kind of showcase, we kind of want to be a little bit, I don't want to say zeitgeisty, but like we, you know, jump on if a deck's doing well and it's like something that looks cool, let's put our two cents on it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that definitely has helped, but also kind of just playing decks we love. We've been kind of teasing it a little bit, but we are looking to expand now that I got part of put onto the content creator program. I want to use the opportunity for us to, you know, grow the channel and do different things. And kind of Sarah taking some of the mantle while I do work in other fields. So it's an exciting time for us. And I think that trying to expand into different fields is going to be really cool. Yeah, basically.
There's some we can't talk about yet. There are things in the works, may not happen. There's a lot of like negotiation. But the one that I think we can talk about at this point is that we're planning to start Twitch streaming, or more specifically, nice. I'm planning to start Twitch streaming. I've been doing a lot of work with actual good Magic players, so not myself, into improving at Magic and doing a lot better. And I feel like I want to bring a lot of the opportunities I get to Twitch.
Yeah.
So I'm planning on at least doing a once a week show about like one or two leagues, and then bringing in either a deck expert or some sort of coach or reviewer to then review some of the games from the day and see what we can learn from it. So it's a much more kind of learning focused
awesome.
Twitch stream than the norm. I've been working with Jason Yee, who recently top-8ed Pro Tour Outlaws at Thunder Junction. So I'm learning a lot. I'm realizing, kind of saying here, like, I'm quite bad at Magic.
Something I've learned after 30 years is I am not a great Magic player. I am a middling Magic player that talks to a lot of people. That's really what it comes down to.
I kind of get
real good time.
I could chat a high lens off a dog. But yeah, the opportunity to go into streaming, both it on Twitch, but also we'll probably kill two birds and, you know, do the dual thing of put it on YouTube while we're at it. Cause it's like, well, yeah, both here anyway. Yeah. But it's going to be a nice way. So it means that with me in terms of focusing on my PhD, we're still making our content regularly. That's not going away, but just having this opportunity for Sarah to kind of like expand and be like, look, learn something while you're here, and like, you know, I might pop in occasionally. But it's mostly Sarah kind of taking I've said this before a couple of times to people, is that where we balance each other very nicely is Sarah's attention to detail is so good, and I feel like having the opportunity for you to just shine through and be like, look at all this stuff you could learn. All the stuff I should learn. learn along with me. And I think that's going to be super duper fun. And it's going to be a nice little, you know, just another piece of the puzzle. So, you know, as we're growing. And again, Zach, like you, I also can talk to anyone and kind of shake hands.
This is true.
To shake hands with anyone.
We are the loudest force in this format.
Oh, I'm not gonna lie. When I make it to Eternal Weekend, it's not even an if now. It's definitely a when, because I've got my money. I've got the money put aside for it. Nice. I got my visa. It's all sorted. I just need to date at a location, and then I'm there.
Amazing.
I am genuinely terrified of some of the Americans who, when I turn up, and they're gonna know me through Twitter or something, and they're gonna be like, "Oh my God, this isn't an act. This is very real." I'm like, "Yes, Habibi, jump on board. It's an experience like no other." And then the people who like kind of get that vibe are like riffing off it, and then there's gonna be some people who are like, "She's a tour de force." I'm like, "Yes, yes, I am. Yes, I am."
Hopefully, call myself a tour de force.
When I got the New Perspectives program and I met my fellow New Perspective grant members, who are very nice, but I did tell them that you will probably hear me before you can see me, and so don't worry about that. It's just part of the course. But yeah, no, it's fun though, and I feel like also one thing with the Gambit more than anything is I think it has made us better players.
Yeah,
because. We're
getting those reps in. That's the most important thing. It's like it's like Allen Iverson said, practice.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
An American basketball reference for you guys.
We got
Philadelphia
you.
American basketball reference. I want to know also, we'll have all of your guys' links in the thing below so that people can go and check out obviously check out the YouTube channel. If you're not subscribed, subscribe to Legacy Gambit. Subscribe to Sarah's Twitch, which we'll have down below as well. I'm assuming that that you have a Twitch as well, Sahar. We'll have that.
Well,
link
it's going to be the
all
Legacy
these links will be below.
All
oh,
the
perfect. Link- yeah, yeah.
We got one link tree. It's all in there.
That's the way to do it. Link tree.
Yeah, link tree is your friend.
Yes.
People make a link tree.
Eternal Dirtles is proud to be sponsored by Moxfield.com. Moxfield is the best deck building website on the internet. You can find all of my and Phil's decks in links below, including decks from this episode. And if you do, you'll be directly supporting the channel.
It's going to be all under the TLG umbrella. So it's all going to be good fun. I'm excited to see how it goes. And yeah, again, Sarah's going to be doing educational work while I'm here with the vibes. Going,
fun piece
Hello!
Of news for me is currently they're deciding who gets it, but I am in the running for a New Perspectives grant for Vegas, which is it's going to be
cool.
That'll be interesting. That'll be a giant boon for me because it's not cheap to get to Vegas, to stay in Vegas, the whole thing. And it'll be nice to be able to lend my voice to the rabble.
To a buffet with magic players. That's
I've been there several times.
Absolutely not. I thought about, I put my creator application in for for the lulls.
Yeah.
And I was like, what happens if I get it? And I was like trying to figure out logistics. And I was
that's
like,
what happened
time?
To me last time. I was like, I'm unemployed. let's see if I get this. And I got it. Luckily, I'm very thankful that Joe Cherries of Nitpicking Nerds actually gave us some money to get a hotel for that.
Good.
And he was like, no strings. Just like, I just want to make sure that you get out there and you get to do your thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was amazing. Really cool.
I genuinely think if I had to go to a MagicCon Vegas, I would need to do the thing where, I get a bunch of people together. We Airbnb, a mansion for a month. And then I just work in a casino for the entire time. Work it up. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've dealt cards before. I've dealt with that.
Just start dealing. That's what Tron is bad does as a side hustle. I want to say side hustle.
I think that's the full hustle in truth.
Some hustle.
Magic is the side hustle.
That job, you can always tell when a Magic player has done that job. 100% of the time. We have a bunch of ticks that we can never fix after we've done it. The classic one is we'll shuffle our deck and we'll present it to you and we'll do this. Instinctive.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you have to do that for the cameras to show that you have nothing in your hands. And when I used to do it, every time I put something down, just instinctively, you have to show you have nothing in your hands. You're not stealing any chips.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not palming anything.
There's this thing. So I've been playing since 1994. And when I got my first credit card, which was like a debit card. I would instinctively put it onto like the table to like hand to the thing and tap it at the clerk. Every now and again, some clerk would be like, "You're a Magic player." every so often, because there weren't as many Magic players in the 90s as there are now. But
there's so many Magic players. Yeah, so many Magic players now. No, it's going to be for MagicCon Amsterdam. I also realized with MagicCon Amsterdam is I'm now gone from it being like a holiday with events thrown in to effectively it's basically a weekend of work.
Yeah, it is a job. Yeah.
I've got two legacy events, which is kind of on me, really.
Yeah.
I want to do a bit of content with some of people who are going, like play legacy. I have a panel. And nice. I'm doing the unknown event. So I'm like, I've got to, you know, do all the other stuff I do, which is go see, you know, do my mum check with the pros on the pro tour.
Doing a panel is like, that is a whole weekend. Like,
yeah.
When I did the panel with Mauro for Magic journalism stuff, I didn't realize how much work that was going to be.
Yeah. It's going
to
be a lot of work.
It was awesome to get to like, you know, I remember being in, the, like, as it was happening, I was just like, whoa. I'm not screwing this up. Amazing. But like, it was really cool to like, you know, just be there and kind of have an effect on the room. And, you know, people were like, oh, this guy's a subject matter expert on this thing, apparently.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah.
A lot of who are you? They were like, we know you two guys, but who are you? And I'm like,
yeah.
I created Hipsters of the Coast. And they're like, oh, that, yeah, we don't know. You don't like, you know, your face isn't on the thing. You know, like everyone knows Saffron Olive. Everyone knows Mark Rosewater, right?
One with mine, because it's magic and mental health, it's such a weird, it's such a strange like collection. Not a strange collection of people, but it's I was really trying to find people who are either I'm so sad like Hobbs isn't going, because I would be like, I just want a therapist.
Better days, of course.
I want like a better days person. Unfortunately, that's not happening. But I've managed to get a girl named Ron. Who's the cosplayer and streamer, who I didn't realize is also a clinical psychologist on the side. Well, I imagine it's her day job.
Friend of the channel.
Very nice lady she is too. So it's her, myself. So I'm moderating it. So it's myself, Emma Partlow, proper format panel from her own experiences. More from like magic and mental health in terms of content creation, because obviously she's an editor of TCG Player. Daniel Kane, who's one of the commander... content creators, who kind of was the reason why I even thought about doing the panel. And then friend of our channel and all round banter lord that we have is Eco Bronan, who's Andreas Peterson, who is at the Pro Tour competing, and his only get out clause is him top 8ing the Pro Tour, because the panel is on Sunday.
Okay.
I said, that is your only get out clause.
So Yoobi does well, but not too hard.
Well, yeah. It was. I was like,
"Lose your top 8 winner, then."
Yeah.
I said to him, "If you top 8, I'll be so happy for you."
Yeah, of course.
And we will do the panel without you.
Yeah,
and then he was like, "But he's like, but if I do okay, I might. What if I want to do a PTQ?" I'm like, "No, you're doing the panel. That's. Don't even pretend like you're playing competitive."
Well, also, you know, they do the top 8. They do those like one deck, one match at a time. So there might be a pretty huge window in there for you to actually get that
exactly.
done.
Exactly. Again, I hope he does well. I actually genuinely want him to succeed, because he is.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask about that. Is that how they do it now? Because at the last
I don't know off PT, the top of my head now.
Yeah, because like at the last PT, we didn't get to see most of the quarterfinals, because Sean Goddard's match
was incredible.
Against the future winner of the event was like a 2 hour 45 minute like deep best match of Magic ever recorded.
Oh yeah, it's up there in like that, and then the as much as I don't as much as the players who the Jeskai Control Shahar Shenhar.
Oh right, yeah,
the it's lightning here, so, you know that that, but in terms of like recent Magic and the skill, and knowing me and Sarah know Sean personally, and I can see in Sean's face like Sean is working like overtime.
Yeah.
And Ikawa was like an absolute beast. I remember I was messaging one of the the one of his teammates while it was happening. And I was like, is Sean okay? Just tell me he's okay. And he's like, yeah, it's fine. He feels okay. Because I remember I posted it on Twitter. I text Sean about like 9 o'clock in the evening. So which was like, you know, middle of the afternoon. I was like, oh, how are you? I'm just doing checking in on you. And Sean was like, I am 7-3-1. If I win one more, I get to do the next PT. If I win 3 more, I get to go to Worlds. Yeah. So for Sean, it was like, I just want to get onto the, not Amsterdam, the one after Amsterdam.
The gravy train, as it were. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and Sean is, you know, a baby goat, in my eyes. Anyone else can disagree, but in my eyes, is baby goat. And so I was like, okay, you know, I will, you know, good, you know, either way, you're doing incredible. You're awesome. Just, you know, do what you got to do. I didn't go to sleep and then wake up to see that Sean has top 8 of the Pro Tour.
Yes, it's pretty amazing.
And I message him, like, again, this is like 2 a.m. in Seattle. I message him, like, I send him a voice note going, and like a shout, let's go, like at the top of my lungs. And I then message a mutual friend of ours who then tells me that the winning into the top 8 was their mirror match, like a 75 card mirror match between my two favorite people, which is Marco DePivo and Sean Goddard. And Marco afterwards was like, I wonder if Sahar was here, what she would do. Who is she going to root for? And I literally, as soon as he said,
I would genuinely leave the room.
I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I think I ended up saying 1% more for Sean because Sean's British. I think that was my genuine take. But I was like...
Very glowing list of you, I have to say.
I was like, I love Sean so much.
I feel happy and that 1% would sway the other way because he's British.
No, I would just be like, because he's dope. Sean's like, honestly, Sean, because a lot of people were like, oh, Sean's one of the best British players like out there. And I will say Sean Goddard now is definitely in the top 3-5 without even, you know, it depends kind of where you rank. You know, all time, I say it's still probably Autumn by, you know, because of Autumn's accolades. But 100% Sean is getting up there. And so I think Sean's, you know, and Sean also, the thing about Sean plays every format. Sean just loves Magic. I remember that era. Yeah.
Sean is the reason we have to worry about creative technique. Like, that's we'll get back onto Legacy in a second, but I just want to talk about the Pro Tour just a tiny bit, because there's a lot that happened at the Pro Tour that there is like incredibly important to me. First of all, the VML team, Sanctum of All, puts multiple people into the top 8, puts a first-time PT competitor into, like, the winning into top 8 also.
Let's go!
Just absolutely obliterates the entire PT, bringing Slowgurk, which is, like, the deck of the VML. Like, when I played in the VML, Sanctum came with Slowgurk. That's when it started. Slowgurk has always been, like, this VML card. VML is the reason Legacy Gambit exists. Me and Sahar properly met on a team for the VML. Just like an absolute thing. Sean's run is ridiculous. He started 1-3 and then won everything.
Like, I love it.
The man is ridiculous at Magic. That level of play, if he continues playing like that and we still had the Hall of Fame, he would be there in a couple years. Like, this isn't, like, a debate. You watch him in that ridiculous match in the Pro Tour Top 8. So much pressure on him. And he's sitting there like, what if you have the 4th herd migration? And just, like, thinking through, like, every line, these tiny percent odds, and just is like, oh, well, I've worked out a much more complex line that has you, like, deterministically dead throughout all your outs. When a lot of players just wouldn't think about these, like, ridiculous, tiny outs. And it's the reason he's the GOAT. He's just a baby goat.
But the thing with Sean as well is Sean is very humble. Sean for the longest time, and sorry, again, this is, I'm going to, you can link Sean into the links, but just for us to fangirl on Sean for a second. Sean is someone who, at UK events for the last, God knows, 5-6 years, it was very quiet. It was very like, you know, doing well, but not like, But it wasn't like braggy, and it was just very like, you know, he'd always make a top eight, or he'd do this and then he'd do that, and then he'd do that. And I was just like, I've just seen him flourish over the last like couple of years, and I'm so happy when you see players. This is something I've become very passionate about with becoming friends with, you know, the more competitive Magic players, is that a bunch of them just want you to do, like, they bunch of them want each other to do well and be better. And I feel like there is a space, if, like, for me, like, it's something that I would like to achieve in my life, but I also recognize that, like, that's not my trajectory. But what my trajectory can be is to be the person that celebrates their success, celebrates them, you know, going through that journey. And that to me is so special, because a bunch of these players, I'm old enough to be like their older sister, auntie, or mum, with peace and love to them. You think I'm joking?
I think you're joking. This beard is not white for no reason.
Exactly. So for me, like Pro Tour Lord of the Rings in Barcelona, I just walked in. I like swanned in, like walked into the Pro Tour area, and I was like, boys, like, this is my check. Do you have enough water? Do you have enough snacks? Are you hot? Are you moisturized? Are you moisturized? It's hot. And then, how are you? And then, tell me about your record. That's the order.
Yeah.
Because I need, firstly, to check that they're okay. Thank God they have catering. And then you ask them how they are. Because some people go, what's your record? It's like, no, I don't care about your record. Tell me how you are now.
Yeah.
Because if you tell me how you are, then I can get to feeling of like, okay, if you're vibing, you know, you're in a good mood, then I'm like, fantastic. Then your record doesn't matter to me, because I know that. But if you're a bit kind of, you know, it's like, oh, what's happened? It's like, oh, this happened and that happens. Okay, well, we just pick it up. Next match is coming. Your round is about to start. Just go crush it. What's the worst that's going
to
happen?
I have one thing to say about that. And yeah. this is not bad. I think the way you did it is great. Every now and again, I'm at a Grand Prix. This is years ago. I'm at a Grand Prix. Back in the day. And there's always that one fucking guy, right? Comes up to you. You know, everyone's in between rounds. It's like, you know, you're like X and two or whatever. And people, you know, in between rounds, hey, how you doing? You know, they mean like, what is your record, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's always one fucking dude who's like, oh, no, I mean, how are you? And I'm like, I'll fucking throw you across the room right now. Like, are you serious? Like, that's just the most jerk thing to do to like, because we all know the context in which you're asking this question. Yeah. You know, it's not like, you know, you always come up to me and you're like, hey, you know, hey, brother, how are you? You know, like 20 other people in the last 20 minutes have seen me wandering around and have asked me, how are you? And I'm like, yeah, I'm, you know, X and two or whatever. And this one, there's always one dude. I know the exact dude. I'm not going to name names, but that cat will come up to you and be like, how are you? And I'm like, dude, don't do this to me right now. I'm X and two, and I don't need to think about your weird social thing that you're trying to pull off here.
Yeah.
That's rude.
It's why too much. I always phrase it as a double question. I'm always like, how are you and what's your record?
I just
like,
say, that way
it's not. Yeah, the thing is, I actually care about how they are more than the record, but also, I don't want to, like, I don't want to be weird about it, right? So I know they're going to want to tell me their record.
Of course.
So you go, cool, how are you? How's your record? Make it like a double header, and then everyone's happy.
Generally, the way I do it is I'm like, how's it going? And don't tell me bad beat stories.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about it.
Okay, but they did top deck Blightning when I was on Free Life. Okay.
I hate it. Every time someone would tell me, like, they'd be like, oh, let me tell you about last round. I'm like, I immediately disassociate, and I'm like, look at the ceiling.
Just look at
it's not something where I'm like trying to be rude to them. I'm just like,
how dare my Deaf and Taxes opponent play Containment Priest?
Okay? How dare they, like, indeed?
My ADHD does not allow me to visualize someone else's board state in a game I wasn't playing. Like, I just refuse to do it.
That's a fair point. Sarah, actually, I will say one thing. Sarah, when me and Sarah are at events together, I'm usually like, we can kind of like counterbalance each other. But I remember early on, I think one of the big Axion events I was at, and Sarah was watching me, and I was just like, I looked at her, I'm like, don't say anything. I could see her face. I was like, don't say it. I know. Don't say it. And she's like, I just saw her face, and I was like, don't say it. I was playing against Dredge. I was like, I know, I messed up. I missed sequence. I'm fully aware of the mistake I made. And then Sarah was like, okay. And then a minute passes. She's like, Okay, tell me. And then she's like, you did this and then this. Have you thought about this? And I was like, I'm such an idiot. But it's sometimes it's fine. Like if someone's watching your match and like there's someone you respect. But yeah, so I don't, the bad beat story, I'm like, the positivity first, please.
My rule is I will wait a full round to tell someone how they fucked up in that previous round. And if I remember, it's worth telling them. If I don't remember, it's not worth telling them.
Yeah.
It was kind of just like a sequencing of Fred's thing. But the reason I was watching and did decide to talk about it was actually because that event was what I would call Sahara her most anxious. Like before the event, there was a lot of obsessing over minute sideboard decisions.
Yeah.
Just didn't matter. So like my role during that tournament a lot was just to be there like, this is what actually matters. Everything else you're probably panicking about doesn't matter, right? Like, the only thing that mattered in this matchup against Dredge is that you didn't hold up Containment Priest.
Yeah.
Everything else doesn't matter.
I tapped out for no reason, and I didn't need to.
Yeah.
But yeah, sorry.
The one thing I was going to say is, Sahar talks about, like, not wanting to go to the Pro Tour. That's not her place. I'm completely different. I'm going to the Pro Tour. I do not care. I am going to play in Pro Tour, and I'm going to be the player who is the coffee weirdo for my team. That is my plan. That's my entire...
Yes.
That's what I'm going to bring to whatever team I end up on, is I'm going to be the person who turns up and is like, okay, I've got something cool for everyone.
Yeah.
I've got this today. This is my pretentious coffee choice of the day. It is a fucking limited run just this month from a local roast. Really good, by the way. Crosby Coffee Roasters. Not a sponsor, just really neat.
You can get your
Eternal Turtles coffee mugs at links below.
We need to get this
coffee mug.
That is such
it's
a good
so
coffee
It's so good. It's so beautiful. But anyway, on that, I think we should actually start talking about Legacy.
I'm actually just going to ask you guys. So let's talk about like this. So let's talk about the state of Legacy. You know, Sahar, yes. you guys talked about a little bit about it on Joe Dyer's article, but let's get the live reacts now.
So me and Sarah, when we've done these roundtables, we've done two now, I think, Sarah. And we normally have a conversation together, and we have like a working, we have a document, we get all the questions, and we kind of throw some ideas down. And me and Sarah come at it kind of from, I'd say we are aligned. I say 80% of the time, and then there's certain things where I think it's a bit egregious. Sarah might think it's fine, so there was a bit. I think we were talking for like a good like hour and a half on these like four questions, and I think, you know, in terms of format health, I think me and Sarah kind of came at it of like, it is healthy,
fine.
But you need to be interacting, like.
Yeah.
I feel like, so the comment, I need to read this sentence out, because Sarah, I don't know if you know this, but I've had four other people comment to me about this sentence.
Is it my hot take sentence?
It is your hot take sentence.
Okay,
I'm going to read it out, folks, if you haven't seen it. Okay. I think complaints about decks that struggle to interact on those early turns are simply not adapting to the reality of 2024 Magic. This isn't an issue of the health of the format, but the way the entire game has shifted the past 5 years. I've had no less than four separate people going, holy jeez.
Let's break that down real fast. Because
yes.
first off, you know, I am gonna victim blame here. Sarah blames players for not adapting. She blames WotC for adapting too much, right? and then maybe the cards too. But
then maybe the cards.
Okay.
There's layers there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's like my actual opinion that isn't like a hot take that gets clicks on an article, right? So my actual opinion is the game has changed. Like, whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing doesn't really matter. And it doesn't really define whether a format's healthy or not.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the way I think of format health is like, are multiple strategies represented?
Yeah.
Can I do multiple different things? is any one deck just way better than everything else to the point where it invalidates an entire metagame, right? I don't think any of those are true. The thing that I think is true, and the thing that I think that some people don't like about current Legacy, is how much you have to interact so early, right? Yeah. I play Cauldron Painter instead of traditional Painter because I think I need an Agatha Soul Cauldron on one when my opponent plays a Polluted Delta. Right? Yeah. Like, I have decided I need to be interacting that early. I need Swords to Plowshares in my deck because my opponent can play a Sticker Goblin and just kill me. Right? I've accepted the terms of engagement that say that I have to be interacting on these early turns, and I'm rewarded for that by getting these really deep, grindy games that remind me of Miracles Legacy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I've ground as hard as I'm currently doing in Legacy since Miracles Legacy. And that's only because we have these mass exchange of resources early, or like mass denial of use of resources in the case of like Graveyard Hate, right?
Yeah.
And then we get these really interesting grindy games. And I think that's good. I think that's healthy. I think that's good gameplay. It's just you need to accept the terms. And if you're not accepting the terms, that's not format health. That's just this isn't for you, for whatever reason, right? That's my actual
Breach.
Take.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah.
I just say it in the hot take format because gets article clicks. No, that's exactly.
The points I was making was that like people are trying to play Legacy like they played when they got into Legacy, right? Like they're trying to play 2014 Legacy, and that's just not the game anymore. And every time I hear a complaint, it's blah, 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 invalidated my deck that is no longer good because it hasn't been good for 4 years. It's like, look, if you want to play Elves, do you. If that makes you happy, just don't expect to win games, you know? That's a classic example. And if you want to play Elves, that style of deck, you have to realize that, like, what you need to do is, okay, now you're Cradle Control. You don't want to play Elves. You want to play Gaia's Cradle. That's the card that is the legacy, you know, to quote Phil, is the legacy power level thing
power
to do,
level
right?
Card. Yeah.
And so if that's the case, then you need to pivot. And you have to realize that Legacy is not the static format that it was, you know, like I said, like in 2014 for 2018, I played Rug Delver specifically just with the same deck. And occasionally it would be like, oh, well, maybe the threat is now Hooting Mandrills. Maybe the threat is this. But like nothing really changed until Modern Horizons 1 came out. Now, every 2 years, the format sort of, it doesn't rotate per se, but it definitely, things change to a point where you have to adapt. And if you're not adapting, then you're doing, one, you're doing yourself a disservice, and then you're just an old man in the corner screaming at the wall. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Old man shouts at clouds is not a way to win at Magic, you know?
No. And I think that, so I heard your, fine, if I was listening to your episode with David Kaplan of all people earlier. And it's the same thing with Vintage. And I feel like Vintage is sort of in that period also. I think one thing with Legacy that has definitely come to, Zach, you okay?
I'm listening. I'm looking for something. We're good. Continue.
Okay. I'll keep talking.
Please do.
Okay. I think for Legacy now, I think people have only realized how impactful Modern Horizons was, but also how impactful Lord of the Rings was. Like, Lord of the Rings genuinely turns Legacy on its head and denser. And I think there is definitely a space where I think there are some creators who perhaps are... Oh, hello, Brandon. I think there are some creators who perhaps are, the elitist is the wrong phrase, but it's definitely like, oh, it's fine. So why are you getting worried about it? I can understand people's frustration. Heck, you have Tony Scamone here thinking the Bowmaster should be back. Like, I understand people's frustrations, but I also think Sarah's correct. There is a rules of engagement that you have to do. And like, I've been playing like Ancient Tomb decks for the longest time now. Like, I have mostly accepted that right now I don't want to register a strong lady in the format because what happens? It gets fort seized out of my hand and then gets reanimated and I'm very, very sad. And then I cry and then we're like, but that's my job, not your job. But I think there's I think there is players who are thriving, and then there are players who are adapting, and then there are players who, I think, as you said, Zach, just...
You're shouting at clouds.
I think there's a shouting at clouds, and Twitter definitely does perpetuate that, but I think there are some players who want their deck to be... Especially deck specialists.
Yeah.
Deck specialists are where you have crafted your identity around an archetype, and that archetype is in a weaker position because of the current metagame. I can appreciate that that is challenging because you've, you know, put all this time and effort and love into it. And, you know, best example, Sam Downs played Jesko Control for his channel. And I was like, what have you done with my friend?
Well,
what have you done with my friend?
Quick Sammy question, Sahar. What is my online persona's name?
What do you mean?
What is my Twitter handle?
Dirtle Magus.
What do I play in Legacy? It ain't Dex the Dirtle, that is for sure. You know, I have gone through the entire range of like, play this deck, play that deck, play that deck. I was known as a control player. I don't do that anymore. Why? Because it's not good. So you have to, like, if anyone can get on board with, you have to change or die, and this is what I was looking for. I was looking for a comic book called Change or Die that was... not the Authority, whatever came before the Authority. Stormwatch, Change or Die. Really great book. But that mantra, Change or Die, right, to me is like, that is Magic the Gathering. If you are not figuring out how to beat your opponent by changing the way you play the game, then you're probably just getting lucky when you win, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Or just good skill or good pilot. Yeah. Like, you know, I've seen good pilots. The one thing I will say on the metagame, and shout big W to Daybreak for more challenges. I am finding it extremely funny, and I think it's still happening. Sarah, there was a couple of weeks ago where for every Friday night Legacy challenge was just all the Storm Dads. Did you see this?
That's when Brian Cook can play Magic.
Yeah, but it was like Brian Cook, Michael Reed, Romario, Tony Scapponi. I was like Max Gilbert. I was like, what is happening?
It's when you hang out, you know?
It's like all the dads. It's all the Storm Dads. Because what's happening is they're playing. Either they are putting their kids to, you know, they're doing their final preparation with the kids or whatever. Or they're, you know, the kids are still awake and they're kind of doing stuff. So they're playing Storm because it's quick and then they can do stuff between the rounds. I find it very funny.
My hot take actually is like in current Legacy, control is fine. You just have to control quickly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like the Beanstalk deck is so good at controlling because you play a Beanstalk on turn two and then your Force of Will's draw a card and it's like, cool. We're just doing this now.
And imagine casting a 4/4 that draws you a card, has lifelink, first strike, trample, hexproof, and what's the other one? It has what a trip, like, I don't know, vigilance. It also has vigilance. So
I'm not even talking about the Draco. I'm just talking about like traditional Beanstalk control at this point.
But that's the Draco deck is a good example of control fast because you're like, okay, now the game's over. Like if I have out the Beanstalk and I drop Draco, like so many decks are just like, I can't even race that game over. Like, let's go to the next round. I think I did a league in like an hour and a half one time. Like
that deck's pretty busted.
I was gonna say that the wildest adaptation to current metagame that I've seen is the Japanese painter master Kanakan putting Serenity in their sideboard as a painter play.
Rude.
which is just wild, right? Like reconfiguring our main deck just a little bit, so we're a little less on the artifact lands, and then putting Serenity in our own sideboard be like, cool, 8 cast.
Not die. Losing is better than winning sometimes.
I don't know if you guys have you seen Killaby. Killaby's gone mad. Killaby was like, I'm playing a stompy combo deck. I was like, firstly, what are you doing? Don't put the stompy word in your storm combo deck. And then I realized the reason why he said it was stompy is because he's got sticker goblin. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cute. I wanted to I wanted to reach out. I don't know him that well because I think he's sort of I think he's European actually.
Yeah, he is.
But yeah, I just saw that he put stomp. He put like all the words, like all the legacy words together. My brain was like, "Happy be what?" That's all the words. That's all the legacy archetype words in one deck.
Okay, I'm gonna defend Killer Bee's name of this deck for a second. Number one, it's got Ancient Tomb in it.
Yeah, that's stompy.
And as we all know, Ancient Tomb means stompy.
I love it too.
Like it should. You guys know about that? Like Rogue Elephant called Stompy because of a Simpsons episode where he called the elephant Stampy.
So, fun fact, and we'll bring this up. I have written articles for the Legacy Gambit, and when we did Helm Stompy, I went over the history of the Stompy archetype.
Go and find them, they're very good.
It's very good. Like I talked about Elephant Stompy as like an early thing. But also it's because it storm entities you. Like, it doesn't kill you traditionally a lot of the time. You do, like, your Ruby Storm Gamble stuff. And then you go, like, Storm Entity. Storm Entity is a 1919 swing for 19.
Yeah.
It's
pretty hot.
It's very Dragon Storm to me.
It's like he's trying to reprise something that has been dead for a long time, and I appreciate it. But actually, while we're talking about deck brewers, deck brewers are having the time of their life. Like I know, Zach, you've had a bunch of the Storm aficionados on with Tony and Bilderberg.
You had a whole week.
You had a whole week. There were so many of them. But I feel like the people who are adapting and are flourishing are trying to look at the metagame and ask questions of the metagame.
Yeah.
And I think that's the interesting part. I feel like the synthesizer, I mean, in terms of funders,
like they're getting in the reps and they're figuring out the change that they need to make so they don't die. Yeah. Right? That's the whole idea.
I think so. I've been playing on, I've been playing Mono Red, and I was playing the kind of XJ Cloud, like, you know, stock list that was happening. And I remember talking to Sarah about it. So I was like, I don't know, something's just, either I'm not playing it correctly or something's off. Like I don't mind the prison-y element of it so much. I can do that. I thrive in that environment. But I was like, I'm not killing people quick enough. I'm not being proactive enough to kind of just get them.
See, Sarah has her hand raised.
I know. I'm going to finish the sentence and then Sarah. And an Eco Baroden top eights with this kind of love child. And then I'm like, it can't be that bad. And then I run it through like three leagues and go like 10-5. I'm like, and then we play it on the channel. We go 4-1. I'm like, oh, my brain is activating. And then I realize I just need more creatures in my deck.
Well, before Sarah forgets what she's going to say.
So number one, the hybrid deck is gas. I'm actually like a really, really big fan of it. Number two, Sahar, we've had this conversation. You're not hitting people with your unlicensed person.
I am not hitting people with my
person. Attack.
I should be attacking. I am using it as a defensive card, but actually it's an offensive card.
This is my thing about like quick interaction and legacy, right? And it's about understanding that when you're playing these kind of like red stompy shells, in the early game, you're stopping your opponent doing their really quick thing, mm-hmm. these prison pieces. But then you need to act like you're a mid-range deck and make this pivot.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. You need to identify the point where you're meant to start swinging with your unlicensed
hand. You gotta switch the gears.
That thing hits for 8 a lot of the time. Yeah. It is nuts.
Well, this is the way I always think of it, right? There comes a time when your protection piece becomes an attack piece, right? That's a classic, like, unlicensed hearse. But really what you're doing here is denying them card draw, right? You're denying them extra turns in the game. The more turns they have, the more chance they have to figure out how to beat you. So if you can stop them from getting to the fifth card in their deck by just ending the game before, like the best graveyard removal is removing the player, right?
Exactly.
And if you can do that, you know, you're on the right path. So it's always about when do you shift the gears?
I'm going to make this one like big context thing that you kind of need to level up if anyone out there is trying to do this, I think. The reason you play Unlicensed Hearse is to deny these ultra-fast graveyard threats, right? Post-board, they're usually cutting Animate Dead because they know you have Hearse, right? They know you're playing all this graveyard hate. So that only reanimation spell they keep in is Reanimate. If they're below 7, they can't reanimate an Atraxa. So hit them with your Unlicensed Hearse to put them under 7.
Yep.
Like, it's this thing. Unlicensed House doesn't need to do it anymore if they can't reanimate it anyway. Like, if you get them below the point where they can reanimate a troll and a Traxxer, it's like, cool, you reanimate a Grief, swing for 8, you have to chump block. It just doesn't matter anymore.
It was definitely a moment for me with that realization. And, like, I think it actually has taken me not playing Hearth's, like, main deck. Because I did the thing of, like, I pivoted too far and I turned into, like, a control deck, which could then kill you. And then you're just at a stage where I can admit that my mid-range brain didn't fully kick in. But now I'm like, well, game one, I don't even care about that. Game one, I'm trying to just get you dead. So then we can worry about the mid-range plan games 2 and 3. And my God, it's incredible. Do you know One Ring's busted? Did you know the One Ring is busted? Please and thank you. You chuck it with a bomber for 6. That's 6 damage. They're basically dead by that point. But actually, talking of, I'm conscious we haven't talked about Thunder Junction cards. I want the 2 cards. So Zach, when we did our preview episode.
Link somewhere.
I think we were like, Lava Spur Boots is probably okay, and Synthesizer's like, eh. And we were very wrong.
Well, we were wrong about Synthesizer. We were not wrong about Lava Spur Boots. We were just not enthusiastic enough about Lava Spur Boots.
I was like, this card can probably make it into a saga list. But having seen, especially Boots, and Synthesizer to an extent, but Boots, the play pattern that I feel like Phil Gallagher said of, like, make end step, make a construct, get the thing, attack for like 15, like whatever, even like 8 or something. 9.
It's the Colonel 3 piece. Construct Boots, you know? It's like...
It gets you. And then Synthesizer, we played it on the channel and I genuinely was like, hang on a minute. A bunch of 8 cast players were moaning that they were like meltdown. They were trying to like mitigate meltdown, which is why Geralf the flesh maybe.
I still like him.
I know you still like him, Zach. Geralf the flesh maybe is a better option. And then everybody in the community was like, no, let's really lean into it. Let's make these so huge that they don't have an option to cast Meltdown.
They have to cast Meltdown or they're dead, right? Like, that's kind of the...
Very much so. And I think some people went really all in and making, like, 2020s. And me and Sarah were like, no, hang on a minute. And we messaged Swifty Time, because Swifty Time is, like, you know, when we did our A-cast episode, And the thing is, he's also, like, he's a baby. We're just like, you're like, how old? This is insane. But I remember Swifty, because again, when we do our deck specialist thing, we have chats with everyone, and they're still open. And when we came to the Synthesizer episode, I think Sarah sort of messaged Swifty and was like, yo. And then Swifty gave us a list, and Swifty was still like, I think Synthesizer is still a trap, but it is very powerful.
Yes.
And we were like, oh my God, this card's incredible. But I feel like a Synthesizer deck, there isn't a perfect list. That list hasn't become stock, because I think people still like the pet cards. I'm glad Guy's Cradle has left the building, because I don't think you need Guy's Cradle. I don't need to go that all.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And people playing Frogmite.
What are you going to do with all that mana? For real.
Exactly. What are you going to do with all that mana? Frogmite, I think, is like a bit cute. I don't think you even need Frogmite. That's the thing. Synthesizer makes another... You play another Synthesizer, you make another one, and boom, you know, the whole thing happens. And then Boots, but Boots for me is like peak number one best card for Legacy, and I don't think it's a remotely close, because we have Urza's Saga, and Urza's Saga's busted. This card makes 2 bodies and then gets whatever card you want?
Yeah.
For one card?
I think Lava Spur Boots is probably the most impactful card from Thunder Junction that I can think of, but I think the one that had the most effect on a archetype is actually Satoru. Taking Dredge and making it a combo deck again, like where Dredge is just like, I don't need to do anything but like reanimate my Satoru and then reanimate my Thassa's Oracle on turn 2. Goodbye, you lose the game. It's sadly in a weird spot. I've been playing the mono blue Dredge deck by Mafuz for the last couple of weeks, and it just gets absolutely hated out by every deck. Every deck has a plan, right?
Yeah.
Including Precipitator.
I would argue the one that they really doesn't have a plan against you is Doomsday, because you could just mill that pile.
They don't
pile.
Need one, yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, you mill that pile and they die. It's really funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, God, I have to talk about two things. All right, number one, synthesizer. I think one of the big things, specifically in the 8 cast list, that makes it a lot better than I think a lot of people read it immediately is the fact that it scries too.
Yeah.
Like, the deck can brick, like, pretty heavily, but as long as you keep, like, the hitters coming, it just becomes ridiculous, right? Yeah. So the scry too, and you, like, look, and there's, like, a fort monitor and something else on top of your deck, you're like, cool, put this ancient tomb to the bottom, put the fort monitor on the top, you're just going to die next turn. And second of all, I have to talk about Lava Spur Boots, because I'm in a very awkward spot where I've become, like, a painter girl for the Twitter, and I cannot fit Lava Spur Boots in my deck, no matter
gotta
how
make those
much...
motors fast!
That's what Akifa's Soul Cauldron is for.
Yeah.
Like, the really irritating thing at the minute is that I'm playing, like, this hybrid list that has the Cauldron combo and it has the Painter combo in it. Because my idea, essentially, is we do these early exchanges of resources, and then you have to sweat at every single top deck I have, because I have a million overlapping...
Like Birthing Pod in Modern deck, Birthing Pod. Like, you had to just worry about every creature hitting the board after, like, a couple of things were on.
Yeah. Like, I slam a Fable of the Mirror Breaker, and you start crying, because I'm going to draw two, and that might just kill you.
Yeah.
You just get, like, these overlapping things. You don't play for a combo very quickly, usually. You just sit there and you get, like, this false tempo situation, kind of like old-fashioned Splinter Twin.
Yeah.
Where your opponent can never tap out, because if they do, you just go, oh, Engineer, put the Devourer in the bin, tap Cauldron,
you're dead.
Yeah. Yeah, you die. Or I go, like, I'm like, I've got a Welder in a bin. Tap, this is a Welder now. Engineer, get Chaos Defiler, blow up your thing. I've had situations where I've played against, like, traditional Grixis Reanimator. They've made a Gristlebrand on turn one. Drawn 14 and died while I was on the draw. Like, this is their turn one. They do that. I'm just like, oh, cool. Land Welder, this. Get Defiler, blow up your thing. Like, the deck's ridiculous. But the annoying thing is, I think because we have to, like, lean into this grindy strategy, we can't actually lean on Lava Spur Boots, which is annoying for specifically trying to beat Beanstalk.
Yeah.
Because I really just want to be able to punch a Beanstalk.
Saga decks have traditionally just, they're so much better against Beanstalk because, like, a Leyline Binding against a Construct sucks.
And if you have Boots, it's just so much pressure so quickly that you make that card advantage irrelevant, right?
I think so.
I'm really trying to fit it in, but I just haven't been able to. Like, I've put in Snaring Bridge main before I've put Lava Spoot Boots main, but that's because, like, Depths decks are back, and I have, like, one flyer in my entire deck, so I need, like, some way of dealing with it. It's Lava Spoot Boots is great. I just wish I could play it. I really wish I could play it.
I think in, like, traditional painter, it makes a lot more sense, but I feel like where you're trying to do, like, multiple things like Sarah's doing is a bit harder. I don't know if Kanakan has made space for, but that's...
Kanakan has not. And that
exactly.
is...
If Kanakan has made space, what hope is there? But I think in the decks that play Saga that can afford to have it included, absolute banger of a card. Absolute banger. Satoru is interesting. To mention about Satoru, and again, shout out to Mathis Van Gogh, who I'm so glad finally got to YouTube and is absolutely flourishing.
Oh yeah,
on YouTube now. I remember when we were coming to do the Dredge episode, and I was like, Habibi, why are you not on YouTube? He's like, oh, I'm thinking about it. I'll do Twitch. I'm like, you're going to kill it on YouTube. Yeah. And he's just thriving. And he's so nice. And he's such a, like, sweet man.
Total
and
sweetheart.
Like,
yeah.
Absolute sweetheart.
Somewhere up here, we'll link our interview with Mafuz. It was great.
The thing is it's interesting you've been playing that deck. Because I remember when we played it pre-Satoru, and we were like, and even he admitted this to us privately, of just like, everything you know about heuristics, yoink, just throw them out the window. It doesn't make sense. And that for me, like, I'm glad Satoru has brought maybe, I'm not going to say heuristic, but at least a slightly you're not having to play 5D chess with yourself whilst playing the deck. At least Dora is like, okay, we now have an engine. Line,
yeah.
Hallelujah. But even me looking at those lists, I'm like, what? I understand, but what? It's like the I don't know if you've seen Sarah. I don't know if you've seen this deck flying around. So this is a couple of the British Magic players. So shout out Callum Smith, obviously, and Francis Cowper. I would call them like deck brewers in their own right.
What has Francis been doing?
Have you seen? This is like a blue green depths deck.
Yes, I've seen Brainstorm decks. Yeah.
Have you seen this, Zach? You heard about this?
No.
So take depths and put up the big cat in the back. Cat in the back. Fairy has entered the building. Yep. This is her room. I am merely a tenant. I've had to close the blinds so I don't get completely washed out in the sun, but she's now here. Hello, everyone. Cat, Miri, turtles.
The real guest.
Yeah.
The real guest. Francis has been was testing this list with just like brainstorms. You had up the beanstalk, so you're submerged, drew you a card. I was like, that's so. And then you played the sloth, the one from Fallout that, you know.
Yeah, of course.
I'm sad that that's not coming onto Magic Online, but also it's fine. This is the other thing we're talking about, like deck diversity. People are testing stuff out. The other cards. So the cards I was expecting. So one card actually in Vintage is doing well. I haven't really seen it in Legacy. Caustic Bronco, the darker confidant, or Snake Horse confidant.
Snake Horse.
It just top eighted a Legacy challenge literally.
Did
last
it? Oh,
night.
Let's go.
AKA Black Beauty. White.
Black.
It was in a black white scam shell, the thing that Ali is working on.
That deck is like that deck. I think so. That's the other deck. So the scam, I think, call it like Scam Blade.
Scam Blade.
It's just like, what if we did? What if we took the modern deck of the black white ephemerate deck and put it into Legacy, and it just looks at Graveyard Head is like, sure, I'll ephemerate it instead, and I am like, cool. Like, it attacks the meta in a different way, and I think it's super cool that it attacks the meta in a different way. Whether I think it has legs is yet to be decided. Yeah. That doesn't really matter, because the fact of the matter is Legacy, we are in an MH3 waiting room. I'm not going to deny that we're in a bit
of a... actually just going to bring up MH3 next as like, you know, let's cut this in like 5 minutes.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to mention our sponsors real quick. Moxfield.com.
MH3, what do you guys think? Like, y'all know, have you seen anything that you're like, oh? Responsible
for the best deck building website in the world. And so, you can get all your cards in one package all together at Tales of Adventure.
Deep into it. Because I feel like a lot of things are going to change.
Of course.
So even if you're looking at it, you're looking at it in the current context.
This is manufactured hype for sure.
But like, even like a month in, the card that you might have thought is ridiculous just isn't. Right? Because other things cause the context to shift.
Yeah.
That said, Eldrazi's back, baby. We're gonna do Eldrazi post again.
I think that'd be good for the format though. I feel like Eldrazi kinda had this spot where they just sort it just fell off a cliff.
I think it's fine now. I think when it first came out, it was very annoying to play against, but now that is just the state, like the stompy style decks are just the state of the format now. So it's like, whatever.
I am going to play Nick Fett with the new Cultivate. It won't be good, but I'm still going to
try.
It.
Yeah.
I feel like, so the cards, the card that I think, so there's two cards I think we'll probably see Legacy play based on the previews that have been launched. We're not going to talk about leaks. This is all just stuff that's been spoiled on Scryfall. I'm literally looking at Scryfall. Is Nevergoyf. I think Nevergoyf has an interesting space.
What did they do to my boy?
What did they do to my boy? He's look at his little face. He's having the best time. But I feel like this in like this sort of mono black aggro Stalactite Stalker kind of style decks that also can have some recursion could be quite fun. And then what did they do to my lady? My lady, my zombie lady. I messaged Newton straight away and I was like, hang on a minute. Newton, Is this got? But again, I look at it and
talking
I go,
about the white of the reliquary. Really...
Yeah, the white of the reliquary. Yeah, yeah. And I look at it and I still go, it's still because it's creature card, so it's like,
Fiend Artisan.
It's I don't think it's as good as Fiend Artisan. It's like.
Fiend Artisan's five through eight, I think.
It does a slightly different thing, but it like increases the consistency of the deck a bit, I think. And the deck was already this well-oiled machine,
exactly.
So like, it's a question of like how much does that increased consistency matter? But I still think it's going to be good. Right?
Yeah, I do too. And then the one card that I completely missed, and then it was only on a I was watching Tap Tap Can See the Don't Really Run podcast, and I talk about Cathodian Nightmare, the energy recurring nightmare.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you don't even need to do something busted with it. Just get back your Orcish Ballbusters with it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, people are thinking too big. Like, just get back cards that are valuable. Again, in vintage, this also might go with a certain cat. Anything less than two, I go, does it go with a certain cat? And then the one that, like, in the Stompy community we got excited about, which is the weirdest one of all, is Null Elemental Blast. And I'm like, the time when Atraxa is literally the best thing to be doing? Get this card in here right now.
Reanimating her a lot of the time.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right?
So, they're still getting all the value,
but you're destroying it. Yeah. Like that, you could do that with a bounce spell. You know?
Exactly. So I was like, the Mono Red Prison community were excited for about 2 minutes, and then we were like, okay, everyone calm down. And then the one that I got really excited about and then realized it was a tax is the Felia Exuberant Shepherd, the doggy, which is the blink one. And I was like, why is it a tax? And I think a bunch of the D&T community were like, why is it a tax?
What did you want it to come into play?
Yes, yeah, I think that's what the D&T...
has flash. It would have been so good.
Like, the D&T community, I think I spoke to a couple of D&T nerds, they also read it 4 times and were like, what? What? But yeah, those are the ones I've seen so far. And then the one that, like, I think my only see play in, like, Maverick is the actual Hate Bear. It's the base power 2/2 in addition to their other top.
Let me tell you, you think that's only going to see play in Maverick, but Infect loves this card. Ugh. Like, I don't know that that's where I really want to be. I'm still personally more of a combo deck than a like make my guys bigger kind of deck, go wide.
Yeah.
But it does stop Plague Engineer from being such a pain in my butt. You just have to remember to side it in against decks that would be playing Plague Engineer.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, my choice for the card that I'm the most excited about is not even a card that is for a legacy deck. I play a Garth the One-Eye Gates-based EDH deck, and March from Velis Vel, the one that choose a non-basic land type, I choose Gates, right? Each land you control of that type becomes a copy of target creature you control. Somebody's getting beat down with a bunch of Gates that are now Shivan Dragons.
I love it.
Get it.
Get in.
Oh, another thing about drafting Pauper Cube last night is people do not value Gates enough.
No.
Like, at all. When they don't know Pauper, like, people were not rating the campuses.
Yeah, yeah.
They were not rating the gates. I got on color campus, on color bounce land, on color gate. Like,
I was, yeah, that was not fair.
And Ash Barrett.
Yeah, yeah. Sarah literally, and I'm actually, one final thing, Zach, is the cards that are legacy playable that are now modern playable.
Yeah.
Like, who let them have Meltdown? Who let them have Kappa?
Sylvan Safekeeper.
Does not need a way to protect its prime time any more than it does already. I don't think it's probably playing it, but...
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. They don't have that many lands on the actual board a lot of the time.
You know, Orym's Chant. As a fan of a certain creativity deck, I lost my mind. Because I said back to Sean Goddard playing creativity. And I was like, Sean, if I could just protect my combo. And then I tweeted about it, and then 4 creativity players were like, you might want like 2 or 3 in like the whole 75.
Here's what I think about Modern Horizons. We always do this. We always look at like what cards will slot into decks that already exist. But what happens is those decks die almost immediately. Those decks are worthless and dead, and something new comes out of the primordial ooze that are these Modern Horizons sets every time, right? And, you know, like, where's Jeskai Control at? Dead. Modern Horizons 1 killed it with a knife in the back. It's done, right? Where's, you know, where's Scapeshift? Same thing. That like, Modern Horizons...
Zach, why? I'm right here.
I was a player. Right, I was a player. That was when I stopped playing Modern. I was like, I can't win with this deck anymore, so I'll just stop playing.
There is a rule to get around that when you're looking at Modern Horizons, I think, and it's that Amulet Titan will still be busted.
So you can ban Titan.
It's too hard to play.
Only Dom Harvey knows how to play the deck.
Watching, there was a Pro Tour. God, I was like Pro Tour 2015 or 2014 or something like that. Where
Summer Bloom.
The Summer Bloom one, where the person playing the deck was not slow playing, I don't think, but he was warned several times by the judge. It's akin to what's happening with Trump right now. The judge warned this guy several times and knew that he couldn't do anything about it, right? And so, you know, not to get too political here, but when you're playing a deck that allows you to stall that many times during a round and then not get any repercussions for it, like, that's, I was just like, this whole deck into the bathtub. I hate it. I don't want to see it anymore. Like, it's stupid to have to watch somebody who's apparently, like, he won the tournament, who's apparently a master with this deck, struggle, like, all the way through to try and figure out how to win with the deck. I was like, this deck should not exist if the best player in the world is taking this much time with it. We banned Sensei's Divining Top for reasons. You know,
I feel like there's one thing I will say with like these lands combo decks, because I feel like the same way with like Lotus Field and Pioneer, and to a certain extent Amulet and Modern, because like other, like, we look at legacy lands decks, post probably being the biggest one, and lands, actually, we'll talk about lands itself. Like, these players have got, you know, they know what's happening, and it's like, It's got so many moving parts that I feel like, you know, there is an element to that. I will say, though, why on God's earth did they print a Sword of Ancient 2?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
I'm looking forward to seeing what that bears out in Legacy, honestly.
I mean, I'm excited. Look, all the Tron community went mad. Tron is bad, lost their minds. But yeah, I think there's some cool cards. Again, we'll see more as they come.
Yeah.
But the cards from Legacy that went into Modern are actually fine. There isn't anything too radical. No. I think I remember doing a thought experiment with Sarah and going, what happens if they printed Doomsday into Modern? I think they will lose their minds.
Well, there's no Dark Ritual, so I think it'll probably still be fine, honestly.
Well, the thing is, because this is what I was saying, there's no Dark Ritual.
Magus of the Doomsday anyhow.
No, but then I was thinking about this and I was like, can you still make piles? Because, like, the pile construction is, like, maybe, like, 4 or 5 max. Because you don't have, like...
You don't have Lion's Eye Diamond.
No, so it's, like, cycle. You have to do the cycle pile and, like, opt and consider. Like, is this how you have to... I'm glad they're not doing that. But it was a fun thought experiment for me and Sarah to try and figure out what the piles would be.
Piles.
Consider piles. You basically turn them to like, pass the turn, consider piles. There isn't anything that's too busted yet. I am waiting for them to crack the whole thing wide open. If it's anything like Lord of the Rings, we're going to have a 2-mana thing that, like... I think, what was the funniest one? It was with the graveyard. I think it was Eli Goings who were like, turn Graf Digger's Cage. It was like Graf Digger's Cage, but it's also Split Second.
I saw that.
Surgical Extraction, but if it gets fort seized, no, if it gets discarded, they fort seize them.
Sam, you know, Murphy's Split Second Baleful Strix.
Exactly. All of these, like, I'm just expecting that whole thing to be busted.
I would like to see a Lux Don Smiter that your opponent has to choose if they look at your hand.
Oh, hell yeah.
We used to have protection versus discard spells in that form, But then they started just like massively printing Thoughtseize effects, and it's like, you should have to choose this card. It should protect your hand because you have to choose it, and your opponent should be like, I made a giant mistake.
As
a flag bearer for your hand, basically.
My partner, when we first started playing Magic together, the only modern deck they had was Green White Little Kid. And I was playing Affinity mostly then, but one night I turned up and I had to play Jund because the person who lent me Affinity wanted to play it.
Thank you.
I literally just went, I didn't know what was going on, and I went Lily of the Veil.
it's the worst. Ooh. When it happens, I've been on that side. Turn two Lily of the Veil, my opponent's like Luxton Smiter. I'm like, oh no.
Let's go.
It's so funny. I deserved it so much as well.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing I'm interested to see, because there's like, apart from Merfolk, which isn't real, there's not really a home for the Blue Moon yet.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I need to
Magus of the Flood Moon.
Yeah, yeah. I need to see like if the Blue Moon
is that real. Have they confirmed it yet?
Oh, that one hasn't been confirmed.
Anywhere. So it may or may not be real. I did want to touch on it though, because that's a card that might put Merfolk into a spot. But also they play a lot of non-basic lands. You know?
Yeah, yeah, they've got Cavern Assault. I'm
interested to see if it isn't a Merfolk card though. This is why I call it Blue Moon, because like Blue Moon was like an old strategy, and I don't think it's gonna like come back completely, but I just want to see if like some sort of like tempo-ish deck can leverage that, right?
Yeah, yeah. Just kind of like,
and then you can stop just deck for your Force of Denial, Flare of Denial. You're like, I'll sack this now that I've got a Blood Moon in play.
I'm kind of glad though it is sacking a creature. Sacking a creature is a real cost, and that is
sacking a damn Veteran Explorer. That is not a real cost.
That's still two Nykthit players in the world.
I sack my Thassa's Oracle to deny your Stifle on my trip.
Yeah. It still leaves because there's one card in my deck. No!
Yeah. It's probably still meant to be Pact of Negation, but it is funny to think about those kind of like circumstances.
I think on the whole though, we'll see how it goes, but I'm cautiously excited, but I also remember what Lord of the Rings did.
Yeah. Looking at that set initially, people were like, okay, one or two cards, and there's like, that changed the face of the format with the basic land cycle cards. So
yeah,
I mean, we'll just have Lord to see what bears reveals out. We're so early into the preview season, so
yeah. I'm excited either way.
Anyhow.
I mean, the fact that Lorien revealed warped free formats is ridiculous. Yeah,
it is pretty wild.
All right. Well, Sarah, Sahar, thanks so much for coming on. It was a blast hanging out with you. Tonight, I'm going to go to the last match and see Phil's the thing that he's actually at. I'll report back on that in coming episodes to let you guys know how that was. I'm sure it's going to be awesome.
I'm excited. Wrestling I'm sure it's musical, let's go.
Yeah, I'm pretty hyped about it. I'll probably see some of the guys from Dark Depths there as well, which would be pretty great.
As someone who loves musicals, I do appreciate that they went, you know what wrestling needs? More melodrama.
Yeah.
I love it.
Them sing.
Have you seen Glove?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
Have you seen costume where I'm dressed up as Liberty Bell and as Glow?
Yeah. Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
I need to see
I'll send
that.
Again, the Venn diagram for me of wrestling and magic is quite deep. But when wrestling and musicals come together, I was like, Phil told me that, and I was like, that's incredible.
The Venn diagram between us? Because I'm not that into wrestling, but I'm a big musicals and magic nerd. And then, like, is it just we form this beautiful Venn diagram?
It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. I love it so much.
I'm married to someone who was in the theater. Like, it was, you know, the black shirt crew, you know, behind the scenes. Doing light
design.
If it
was a star, I was going to say condolences.
But yeah, she's excited to check this out too.
I'm excited for you guys. Like, this is honestly the thing that's going to be cool. But yeah, thank you for having us on.
Of course.
As always, love chatting with you, Zach. If nothing else, just for the hype.
Yeah.
just a good hype. And yeah.
Yeah. I'll catch you guys next time. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Bye.
Before you go, I need some help. Please subscribe to this channel and do your part to help sustain the legacy content ecosystem. Just subscribing to this channel goes a long way to reminding YouTube that people love and support this format. Now, if you really want to go the extra mile, you should think about supporting us through Patreon. Both the links for subscription and Patreon are right here. And if you're listening on an audio format, you can go to patreon.com/eternaldirtles. Thanks so much for watching.